Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Ashwini, who is here to talk with us about an extra support that's being added to practice this year as support for the Upping Your Game year. Welcome, Ashwini.
Hey, Jen.
Hey. So we're adding a second newsletter. I think we're calling it the Musings.
That's right. Second issue of the newsletter every month.
So
we currently send one at the beginning of the month, and we're going to send another one at the middle of the month, so we get two communications around practice.
And I just got a sneak peek at the first added draft of the one that's just about to come out. I think it's coming out in a few days. Is that right? Actually, tomorrow. Is it coming out tomorrow?
That's right, Jan 29th.
And it is fabulous. I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about kind of what it is and why we're doing it and all that sort of good stuff.
Sure. One of the themes we were looking at during our planning process for the year is how shifting to a place of what we call it, no longer being the child, that famous radio show we had, right, where we're no longer reassuring the child, but we are supporting the person who wants to practice.
Yes.
And that stepping into that awareness is really one of the ways in which we're going to up our game this year and supporting that person who's the awareness that's practicing and growing that grown-up awareness, if you will. And that was one reason, which is if we're going to support that, then we want to get really clear on what practice is and what are the principles of practice, and that was one way of doing it. So to offer that person who's practicing some practice support.
Yeah.
So that was one piece of it.
Uh-huh.
Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was just going to reflect that that's so important, isn't it? That so, yes, we're reassuring the young parts of us, and all of that is an important part of practice. But to really give the support and the information even to the part of us that wants to practice, and not to assume that we know what practice is, that we actually want to explore really, really deeply. So I really want to practice. I want to wake up. Well, what does that mean? How do we do that? And it feels like this newsletter is a support for that.
Yes, because what it's pointing at is, and the phrase we used when we were looking at upping the game is, I'm taking responsibility for my practice.
Yeah.
Right? That's the grown-up place from which we come. And a corollary, the next logical step we were looking at is, you know, Zen is a tradition of pointing the finger.
Mm-hmm.
We don't state what the teaching is. We model it. We experience it. We live it. We discover it, right? I mean, the Buddha's famous for saying, don't even believe me, have your own experience.
Right.
And the transmission of the teaching in Zen are the koan is a classic example where what is given to you is something that you work with, something that you practice with, something you take responsibility for seeing through so that you get what that is pointing at.
Yeah.
Right?
Because that's the only place that practice makes a difference is when we actively take that full responsibility. So the teacher sitting there and explaining, well, here's the koan and here's what it means, isn't going to do us one bit of good. We need to take the koan for ourselves and work with it and have our own experience.
That's right. And so, you know, there's so many people who say, I've heard Sherry say this over and over again, but I finally got it, right? That's that place that
exactly.
we have to get to receive and have it for ourselves.
Yeah.
And so the whole newsletter is a way to explain some practice principles that are behind the teaching. So basically, there's nothing that the guide says that isn't pointing to a particular place from which awareness is speaking, right? And we often either just accept it as content or accept it as a teaching or a process without actually using it as a way to get what the guide is pointing at, or where the place from which the guide is coming from.
Uh-huh.
And so, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, it's the practice of taking responsibility for our practice and being the awareness, growing the awareness that practices is how do we practice taking what is being said and finding our way to the place from which it's coming.
Yes. Yeah. That was exactly what I was going to say, that it sounds like from what you're saying that what it does is it makes the teachings truly into tools that we then carry with us as we're working out our own salvation diligently. So instead of being, oh, in this situation, this, in this situation, this, in this situation, you know, X, Y, Z, instead, we have an experience, like in each newsletter, as I say, I just read the most recent one, it's like exploring a particular principle, really giving a deep invitation into really having our own experience of that, and then we can practice using that tool all over the place in our lives.
Yes, because I don't want to give away the first newsletter, but this is what it discusses, right, which is that our practice is based on practicing, in the sense of practicing is actually the transformation. There's no outcome that we're going for, and that's really the gem and the secret behind everything, right? How you do everything, how you do anything is how you do everything. And so what conditioned mind has us believe is that there is some wisdom out there that we can acquire and we work with it and work with it. But really, in the practicing of the teaching that we are, we become the teaching, right?
Uh-huh.
So it's like one of those processes, the outcome kinds of things.
And
just by turning our attention to what is being said and by sitting with it and letting life drop in what it might mean and how we can apply it, we are being transformed, and we are going to that place of transformation and participating in that process of transformation, and that's what we're going for in practice anyway.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So I live in that place. I live in that place of life informing me, and my attention is on awareness, and awareness is attending to attention, and that's the place I want to live.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, it really is up in your game, isn't it?
It's totally up in your game. It's totally up in your game, yeah.
Yeah, it's really taking it from, you know, I don't even quite know how to say it, but you just articulate it so beautifully, from like, you know, I practice, to practice is who I am, in a way, for lack of a better way to say it. We're becoming
the process
practice.
That I am.
The process that I am, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, right, Jen, there are just so many hundreds of examples of the truth within quotes, if you want to put it out there, that were offered all the time.
Yeah.
And by knowing that they're all finger pointing to the moon is a practice of not taking it just on face value.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Yes.
So if I'm offered something like we never roll out the dining table until the whole meal is done, because that is Zen. You can work with it. Or why do I take my shoes off before I go into the meditation hall? Every single thing in practice is intentionally been constructed, and lots of people don't know what that means.
Right.
So why do we price retreats the way we price retreats?
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, why do we ring the bell in a certain way? Or how do you get trained to ring the bell in a certain way? All of these things that is our practice, there's a reason for every single one of it, one of those things. And so if you look at the action, and then you look at the teaching behind it, if everything is a finger pointing to the moon, then everything is a clue to waking up and ending suffering. And we live in that curiosity, in that spirit of inquiry, in the what is this teaching me? What is life offering me in this moment? And in the process of looking at that, we are transformed, right? We let go.
Yeah.
We see everything we need to see in the process.
Yeah, boy, you just hit on so many of the key points. But that spirit of curiosity and interest, which is a complete shift away from basically from a focus on taking everything personally and having it be about me, to that curiosity, that wonder, that interest, not only in, you know, as you say, all the guidelines, for example, at the monastery point to something and we can really be looking at that, but it shifts our whole way of being, that every moment of life, you know, wherever I am, whatever I'm doing, there's a teaching in it. There's a principle that goes with it.
So we're in the attitude of guidance. We're in the attitude of learning to love learning. We're in the attitude of mind of what we want. I mean, we're being in the attitude of mind of curiosity and being given the lesson by life, then, you know, we are being given the lesson by life, and the process is the outcome. That's why it leaves you laughing, right? It's so self-recursive in such a way that you just have to, at the end of the process, you can't say anything.
Exactly. And, you know, it just, as you're talking, it's so, everything we're offering this year feels like it so beautifully fits. Because as you're saying that, what I'm seeing is, gosh, as a Sangha, I just project we're all going to be seeing. So, you know, so I'm practicing with this, and then I'm in this life situation, and then I see X, Y, and Z, and then I can bring it back to my sitting group or to the radio show or whatever and check it out. You know, here's what I'm seeing about that, and then get the next piece. And then we all benefit from what everyone else is seeing because we're in on those conversations, and I'm just seeing how, you know, the email classes this year are going to have an extra component of having a radio show once a week attached to them, and how perfect that is for that very reason. You know? Go ahead.
And the line of from Lao Tzu in the first class that came out today sort of captures it, right? There's an intuitive knowing that is seeking, and when we use a teaching to get a principle, we go to a place, and we're transformed to be able to access that place, and then we come from that place. There's the specific leads to a general, and from the general, we can make sure that the specifics are flowing from that place, and so it informs the specific back, right? So if I understand why we ring the bell a certain way and a certain level of sacredness towards the bell, then if I'm going to that place of sacredness because I understand the principle, I can bring that sacred attitude of mind to everything that I do.
Yes. Oh, wow. Wow. I get chills as you say that. Yeah. So, Ashwini, I'm aware that we're a couple minutes over. Are there any other particular points that you wanted to kind of offer about it before we end? Other than people get to have the experience tomorrow.
I guess so.
And I do want to say, I think the registration for the email class is still open, yeah?
Yes, I think anyone who hasn't registered for the year-long retreat or the email class can hop on it and we'll try to catch you up, even though the first class went out today.
Yeah, which was, again, wow, amazing. I really, really enjoyed the class, and I'm very excited about the radio show starting in 2 days. So we'll have 4 shows associated with the first class, and then each class through the year will have that same thing. Each week during the email classes, we'll have an extra radio show. So really, really exciting.
It is indeed.
Thank you so much, Ashwini, for being with us.
Thanks, Jen.
Okay, good night.
Good night.
All right, Michael, we'll turn it over to you and Sherry.
Okay, great. Thank you, Jen. Thank you, Ashwini. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael.
Those gals are very enthusiastic.
They are. They are some lit-up, upbeat creatures, aren't they?
Yes.
And, you know, they're right about everything.
Say that again. I lost the last part.
They're right about everything they're saying.
Yes.
That's exactly it.
Yes.
Get into that lit-up place. And you have a lit up life.
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Just being lit up.
Just being lit up. And it's you know, it's plenty.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
It's plenty for the one who's lit up, and it's plenty to bring to all the rest of us. So it works,
yes.
Really works out well for everybody.
Yes. I'm picturing a process of lit up, and all content of life travels through that process.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Oh, yeah. Very good. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
Very
yeah.
exciting. Very
yep.
exciting.
And this year is starting off with a big old roar, isn't it?
No kidding. No kidding. Seems like there's a new practice opportunity every week.
Yes. You talk about something for everybody, huh?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good. It's good. I love it. And one of the things, of course, that I love best about it is that there's so much available to people no matter where they are.
Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, literally, wherever you are around the world, wherever you are in your life, in your finances, there's just more and more available to for everybody to feel a part of, which is important. It's extremely important.
Yes, and as you are fond of saying, a lot of them are free, or we might say by donation.
Exactly so, yeah.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Well, and you know, a big part of that, Michael, and I know you do know this, so many of the things that, especially the things that are coming up now that are available because there are people who are devoting their lives to practice such that their practice is offering practice.
Yes.
Yeah, so the facilitators, the coaches, you,
yes.
the monks, people who are devoting their lives to practice in a way that what lights them up in their practice is offering practice to others. So we can do all of these things. If we had to, as a nonprofit, pay all of the people to do all of the things that are being done, it would be impossible. I mean, we'd scale back to two offerings.
right.
These people step up and say, well, I want to, it'll support my practice. It'll
yes.
support my practice to practice being for others. So I'd like to be a part of that and offer that. And so we have all these monks and coaches and facilitators and hosts and all of these things that that people can have as support for practice. So everybody gets supported. Everybody gets to practice. Really good.
It's a win-win-win.
Mm-hmm.
And I have more information about win-win-wins here with several great announcements.
Oh.
Several events are now open for registration. The Zen of Rumi workshops at the end of February. That will be exploring Rumi's relevance to our practice.
Oh, my goodness. I'll tell you, I went on a... I've been working on a project, and I was looking for a quote, and it was a Zen quote. And so I went to a place where they had Zen quotes, and the first Zen quote was by Rumi. So there is a solid connection there. That
yeah.
was going to be fun. That was going to be fun.
Yes. And the brand new Eightfold Path Retreat, that'll be in North Carolina. Exploring the Buddha's Spiritual Map to Freedom, and that retreat is offered in mid-April.
Mm-hmm. And that's available to everyone. So people don't have to be longtime practitioners or have any, there are no prerequisites. So anybody who wants to find out a little bit more about what the Buddha was talking about and how we practice that today, welcome to join us.
Great. And our first guidance day will be on March 22nd. This practice support is now open to everyone and offers folks a phone session with an experienced practitioner to look at anything you'd like to look at in your practice.
Mm-hmm.
And as we heard from Ashwini, the registration deadline for the year-long retreat has been extended until this Friday, January 31st.
Oh, wow.
So, yes. So you still have a chance.
And if you're going to do it, then I heard her say we'd catch email class people up. So
yes.
All right, good.
So you still have a chance to join us for the email classes, the special radio show on Thursdays, and the at-home retreats, which are all themed around upping your game.
Mm.
So visit schedule.livingcompassion.org for more information.
Mm. I read something somewhere recently that said, talked about us, not us, but all people like us of similar pursuits as athletes for God.
Athletes for God. Great.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
Yeah. That's us.
That's us. Mm-hmm. And our call-in number is 888-4-SANGHA. That's 888-472-6442. The show ID is 15406, and then you'd enter your PIN followed by pound, and we ask people to talk for about 5 minutes, please, and to focus on one topic. And they are all here, ready, waiting for us, Sherry.
All right, let's go. Thanks,
okay.
Michael.
Sure, you're welcome. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Julianne.
Hey, Julianne, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Great. Thank you. What's going on?
Well, I've been listening to the show ever since the Transcending Ego Workshop, which was
uh-huh.
a retreat back in months ago,
mm-hmm.
during which I had participationitis and my ego was quite flared up. it was an excellent workshop, retreat. I keep calling it a workshop. But everything is going really, practice is amazing. It works. I've been going through some really, really, really tough stuff.
Mm.
And at the same time, basically, my life is upside down, which is, from a practice standpoint, fine. You know?
That's a good point. What a good point. Yeah. Yeah. I know exactly what you mean. I mean, it is the kind of thing that sounds just crazy or weird or whatever to people who don't know what we're talking about, but that's exactly right.
Right. Mm. So, yeah. So I'm watching my ego, you know, go back, watching myself go back and forth between the light room and the dark room, between ego and my heart, and knowing at the same time that everything is okay.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still difficult, you know. It's.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. 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 The fact that we know it's good practice. The fact that we. As you are disidentified enough to know that this is what's going on,
mm-hmm.
it actually doesn't make it any easier.
No, that's interesting. Yeah.
We're
yeah.
just willing for it. That's
uh-huh.
the difference. We're willing for it. So we know that when we get to the other side of it, the journey is way, way, way worth
exactly.
what we've gone through. But
uh-huh.
it's still rugged in the middle.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Yep. I know it's worth it. And I even get, you know, when I'm centered, I get really excited and I'm happy
mm-hmm.
about it in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then there's that dark room.
Yeah. Where I don't act gracefully and I, you know, I get beatings and I am tempted to take them.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I don't act
skillfully. But you're seeing it in a different way, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the power of it. So I can see the beating. I can see the temptation to go with it.
Mm-hmm.
I can see who. I can get a sense of what part of me is willing for it. What
mm-hmm.
part of me is trained to receive it? It actually believes that I deserve it. And in that stepped back way, for the first time, we have a chance to help that person out of that position.
Yeah. 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 Yep.
Mhm. So
yeah.
painful as it is, it's kind of the only way. It's the image of a burning building. You know, there's somebody in a burning building, and you know they're in there, and you know you're going to go get them, or you're going to do your best. You're going to give it everything you've got, and it's terrifying, and it's dangerous, and it's you really can feel a great deal of pain in the process, and you're going to do it anyway, because you just have to, because that's all there is to it.
Mm-hmm.
And when you know that person who's in there in that burning building is you, then you really know that you have to go in no matter what.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it is beautiful. And that I'm so grateful for the practice, and now I know, you know, this is why we practice. This is what I practiced for.
Mm.
Even though all along I was so grateful and certainly used it, you know, needed it,
he's
trying to get me all tongue-tied right now, and I can't.
Well, let me finish that sentence.
Sure.
That when it hits the rotating blades, that's when we're really grateful. Yes, yes, we are grateful when everything is going along and it's really fine, and we're just practicing, and we love practice. It's great. It's making our lives better. We're really grateful for practice, grateful to have it. And then we step into one of those places in life where it really is a matter of life and death. And the thing that's keeping us alive, the thing that's the life raft or the parachute or whatever image we want for that, is practice. And we are so grateful that we have been practicing the way we've been practicing to be ready for this one.
Mm-hmm. It's like it feels like ego's one last hurrah.
Gosh, we hope so, don't we?
I mean, I guess you're right, though. It's not. I know it's
well,
not. I know that's kind
well,
of almost ego talking.
Well, we hope. We can hope. I do know that there is a last hurrah in the sense of when it's the last time there's any hope that it will be believable.
Mm. Mhm. Mhm. Cuz I am believing it sometimes. Mhm.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's just so seductive.
Yes.
It still is, and I guess that's one of the beating sources that I can still be seduced. But yet I realize the freedom of letting go of that. And I...
Yes.
And it's really amazing. So, yeah.
So, if you were a coke addict, there would be times that you would be tempted. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, that process of coming off of an addiction like that, a powerful addiction... an addiction, you know, there are different kinds of addictions, but the really compelling addictions, of course, are the ones that feel good.
Yeah.
And feel bad, the ones that really fuel self-hate. So coming off of something like that, realizing the part of us who is seduced by it, who wants to go with it, who sees, you know, we know that about children, that abused children, we think on the outside of it that they wouldn't want to be with their abusive parent. But they do, because love and abuse are one thing. They're wrapped up together. So in the same way, there are these parts of us who have had this indulged, enjoyed, whatever word we want to use, this addiction to ego.
Yeah.
And we get to, as far as I can tell, stay with it until it holds no charm, You know, it's not like you have to try to avoid being seduced. There is just nothing about it that is seductive. Then we're free.
Wow. Wow. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Whew.
Yeah.
I'm a long way from freedom. Because it's very seductive, you know. But yet,
but
I'm glad to see this.
That's right. And the thing that we remember is it's seductive when it's seductive.
Yeah, right.
There are lots of moments that you spend in freedom.
Yeah.
But we pay attention and we continue to practice because we know that the moment we stop paying attention, it's right there, and the parts of us that are open to being seduced are right there as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
So don't let it talk you into you're far away from freedom.
Yeah.
In each moment that you're free, you're free.
Yeah.
Our practice is to string more and more of those moments together.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Good. All right.
Do you have any homework for me?
No, just keep stringing those moments.
Okay. All right. All right, I'll do that.
All right, good.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. Take care. Good night.
Okay, too. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Julianne. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we're going to hear from our sponsor, and then we'll be back.
All right.
What if you lived with your soul as your pilot? What skies would you fly? How wide would you open? What would you sing if you gave voice to your beautiful heart?
This great song by Trish Bruxford Culligan invites us to give voice to our hearts. Simply Celebrate offers you a variety of ways to express your heart. And one of those is by celebrating the people you love. Our one-of-a-kind customized celebration books are like magic mirrors that reflect all of the laughter, adventures, and delight that friends and family share. Clients tell us that this is the best gift ever. Give voice to your heart and give a gift of love that lasts a lifetime. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
Welcome back, and we have another caller, Sherry.
Hey.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Scott.
Hey, Scott.
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael.
Hi.
How you doing?
Really good. You know, right before, I was just thinking about why I love calling in, or why I love talking to you, and I think what always comes up for me is that I know every time I talk to you, my adequacy will be reflected back to me.
Uh-huh.
And I'm also seeing that that I'm able to kind of do that for myself as well. Seeing that I am adequate to my life, but just such gratitude being able to speak with you and be a part of Sangha in that way.
Mm-hmm. It's true. I never quite thought about it, saw it that way until you said that. But we really don't, in the world, get a lot of reflections that we're adequate.
Yeah.
A lot of other things may be reflected back to us,
right.
But that we are adequate to our lives is not way up on that list, is it?
Not typically.
Yeah.
And I think that's the kind of bridge for me in trusting life and sort of letting go of the clinging to ego.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So on that theme of letting go of clinging to ego, I've been looking at what I'm sort of considering the hui that I've been taught about decision-making.
Uh-huh.
So I've been forever as long as I've been aware, in a duality of, which encompasses pretty much all decision making. You'll be okay over here. You'll be okay over here. And so
uh-huh.
just sort of getting into that ping pong match.
Uh-huh. And you are the ping pong ball.
And I am the ping pong, a poor guy.
Mm-hmm.
So this comes out a lot in the decision making about I'm engaged to be married. And I think there's some room to kind of bust out of that duality and let life inform. And I've been practicing with that. And, you know, one of the things that I've been noticing is just I may be able to kind of break out of one end of it, like I'm going to get married no matter what. Oh, well, that seems to be on one side of the duality. Oh, there's some permission. There's no requirement to get married. Okay, well, then that means the relationship, I need to get out of the relationship. And then to sort of stop that process, and a couple of things that have really helped me that kind of came up in our last guidance. One thing that you said to me when I was kind of like, oh, okay, I think I'm going to get out of the relationship, was you said to me, you never know what you're going to do until you do it.
Mm-hmm.
And what that's really highlighted is that conditioning is always telling me in a knowing way what I'm going to do next.
Yes. Isn't that huge to see? It has no idea what's going to happen next.
Exactly. So,
and yet it wants to present itself as an expert, not only on what you should do, but then what's going to happen.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then somebody's following that as if that's a reality. And then here comes all these behaviors and actions, and there goes my life, you know, in a made up story. And so I've been using that cue, I don't actually know what I'm going to do, as a way to kind of suspend the knowing and just
mm-hmm.
sort of open up to whatever might be possible. And so anyway, I've been doing that to kind of head off the duality and thinking about this relationship. And then I've also been having authentic talks with my partner, which take the form of just saying kind of what is so for me. So just talking from my experience and not attempting to get her to be different or me to be different.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of what's come up from both of those things is just a lot of love. I don't know if I'm actually any clearer on whether I should get married or not, but I do notice that I appreciate me and her a lot more, and I don't find myself being annoyed by her, and just a lot more gratitude,
mm-hmm.
and I feel a lot more relaxed in the relationship.
Yeah, well, it's a strain not being you.
Yeah.
Right? Which is kind of what you're describing. You've gone from whatever that kind of facade was, or being orchestrated so that you would be the right person and say the right thing and do the right thing, and to just being who you are.
Yeah, that's very nice.
It's very relaxing, isn't it? And relaxing for everybody, I would think. Not just for you, but for her too.
Yeah, I project that seems like she's been sort of laughing at herself more and seems a little less tense. But I don't know if that's her experience. It's certainly mine. So it's easy to project. And I guess what I'm seeing too is that even though there's all this sort of gratitude and expansion and relaxation, it doesn't really have anything to do with getting married or not getting married, or if this is the right partner or the wrong partner.
Right. Yes. And, you know, Scott, I heard something else earlier in what you were saying. So back to the ping pong match.
Yeah.
So you'll be okay over there. No, you'll be all right over there. No, you'll be all right over there. And the reality that I've heard is that what you know is you're all right.
Yeah. Yeah, more than all right.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, and so where you are, what's riding on that is no longer your well-being. Because you're gonna be fine, no matter what decision you make.
Yeah, I am. I think I sense that. I actually know that from an aware perspective. And of course, there's an identity who thinks he's gonna die.
Right. Well.
Yeah.
And he may. Right. If he's not authentically you. If it's an identity that is using all of this to stay alive, then when you drop that, that's true. That identity will die, but nothing's going to happen to you.
Yeah, because the sticking point, because of course it wants to say, oh, look at all this love, then you should stay in a relationship. But what's coming out of the conversations and what's been the sticking point, at least on the outside, is she still has a conflict with practice. And through our talks, I have a little bit better understanding, a little bit more compassion about why that's so for her.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels risky to align myself with someone who has a conflict with practice.
Mm.
Even if I love her and she loves me and we have a lot of good things in our life together.
Right. That is a grown-up perspective, isn't it? That two people can love one another like crazy and still know that their partnership might not be a good idea.
Yeah, I guess it's the grown-up perspective that's kind of blowing up how decision... Yeah, because the conditioned way is, well, things have to be really bad and you have to fall out of love and things must be really awful to leave something like this. And it's like, I don't think that has anything to do with anything.
Right. Yes, that is exactly the conditioned thing. She has to do there has to be something wrong with her.
Yeah,
and if you leave the relationship and there's nothing wrong with her, well then there has to be something wrong with you, because there has to be something wrong.
Yep.
Rather than we love each other, but we don't have the same values, or we don't like the same things, or we don't want the same things out of life. You know, one person, you love each other like crazy. One person doesn't want children, the other does. One person wants to, go off on a backpacking adventure around the world. The other one wants to buy a house. You know, we're conditioned to believe in that love conquers all kind of nonsense, that those things aren't going to matter if we really love one another.
Right.
But boy, do we have a lot of evidence that it just doesn't work that way.
Yeah. And I think, you know, just seeing how important it is to take care of, I mean, there are parts of me, and really young parts, who don't want to leave at all and love being loved in the way that occurs in a relationship. And, paying attention to that kind of love isn't contained in her solely.
Mm-hmm.
That love is here always. And yeah.
Her best choice in a partner might not be someone who wants to be with her because she takes care of little kid parts of him.
Yeah, thanks for that perspective. Yeah, and that kind of brings up that doing what's best for all. It's from that survival perspective, it's what about me, you know, but to kind of look at what's kind for all.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it sounds like the conversations are leading both of you there.
Well,
I mean, if both of you can explore honestly together these kinds of what's really important and why am I in this and what do I want, and if we do get married, where are we going to be? What do we want in 10 years, in 20 years? And, you know, what's our life? What do you want your life to look like? You know, when you get to the end of it, when you look back, what are you going to have wanted it to be?
Yeah, thanks for that. I think I was kind of, we've had about four of these, and I'm kind of wondering where, you know, maybe some other, yeah, thanks for that direction.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of looking at that big picture,
yeah.
Not just content in our face, but.
Yeah, because conceivably, you're going to be together for a long time.
Right.
It's one of those, we can fall into a thing of, you know, if we can just get to the altar, we'll be okay. But, you know, the truth of the matter is, what happens after that is we're married. So, you know, it is good, I think, to look at the whole larger continuum of years.
Well, thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. I think it's a marvelous thing in a relationship to be able to bring that, as Ashwini and Jen were talking earlier about that, that curiosity and spirit of inquiry and the willingness to explore. And to be able to do that in a relationship is certainly going to up each person's chances of having the best relationship that's possible to have with himself, with herself, maybe with each other, no guarantees, but the benefits are tremendous, however it turns out.
Yeah, that seems true. It seems like every time I've showed up in a conversation this way, there's just tremendous energy that comes up regardless
mm-hmm.
of the outcome of the conversation.
Yes.
And that is that stick with the process, you know.
Yep. Process is the outcome.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, Scott.
Thanks, Sherry. Good night, Michael. Good night, listeners.
Good night.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Scott. You're listening to Open Air. That was a fascinating conversation, Sherry.
Mm-hmm.
Very adult,
yeah.
Grown up. It's been
Nice. Practice. You know,
process.
It just does a lot for life.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Sherry, we're going to hear from our coaches program, and then we'll be back.
All right.
The year of deepening practice has produced a new support opportunity for people of all levels of practice. A team of Zen awareness coaches guided by Sherry Huber, who offer individual coaching to support awareness practice. This coaching program is designed to help strengthen the inner voice of self-compassion and peace, and places a special emphasis on recording and listening. Whether you're brand new or a long-timer, awareness coaching can be the extra support your heart desires. As the Buddha said, we must each work out our own salvation diligently. Zen awareness coaches can assist you wherever you are in your practice. For more information, visit sanghamarket.com. Look for the Little Zen Monk under the Services section. These services are offered with loving kindness to support those wishing to deepen their practice.
Welcome back, and we have more callers here, Sherry.
Okay.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Kate calling from Seattle.
Hello, Kate.
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me tonight.
Oh, it's a pleasure. What's going on?
Well, I wanted to call because of an interesting thing I was watching happening with conditioning. I'm sort of thinking of it as this is hijacking a way of thinking about something. And I'm finding it a little bit hard to put into words, but I came to the workshop, There's Nothing Wrong With You, in the fall. And when I left there and came home, I had to deal with something that was normally would have been really challenging for me. And I think just because of where I was in my practice, I was very disidentified and able to deal with it in a way that I really never had been able to do in the past. And I recently, just in the last 2 weeks, was going through another really difficult time. And it seemed, in retrospect now, I'm realizing that it seems a little bit like conditioning took over the process and had me believing that I was in this disidentified place. But so in terms of not listening to the voices that seemed like the voices that I typically would be trying not to listen to when I'm disidentified, but yet I was very, very identified and believing it, but sort of ignoring it because conditioning had me sort of thinking that's what I should be doing. Is that making sense as I'm explaining that?
It makes complete sense, and it's very subtle, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. deadly kind of subtle. Uh-huh. So it sounds like you popped out. What happened next?
A series of events that led to the popping out. One was that I was just getting more and more exhausted. And I think what I'm seeing now is I think it was taking so much energy to be sort of pushing all of that down. And by all of that is sort of four or five things happened in a row. I had a medical scare, a financial something that happened. And with each one, I think there was a lot of emotion that was coming up around it. And I was not wanting to feel the emotion or had a fear of feeling the emotion. And so I think conditioning was using the idea that if I didn't listen to the voices around it, that I wouldn't be feeling the emotion, like that I didn't want to feel that way. So there was a lot of resistance around that. So what finally
it was just setting you up across the board, right? First of
right.
all, that these things are happening and it's telling you exactly what these things are, right? Just usually what's going on is it's just working a person, right? A medical scare, it's just, oh my God, it's just that's gasoline on a fire, right? So there it is, and it's feeding the emotion, right? At the same time, creating this story about not wanting to feel the emotion, being afraid to feel the emotion. Yeah. So it's working you, but you can't feel it. So then exhaustion / depression.
Yes, and also this, when you were talking about like the medical scare, like normally I would expect the voices to be saying, oh, this is awful, and what if this is it? And instead it took more the form of like the Pollyanna, of like, oh, everything's going to be fine. And so it felt very different than it normally would have. And yet it was the same complete lack of feeling around it.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so there you are. It's got you. It's stirring up the feeling and convincing you that you can't feel it. So you're flatlining,
mm-hmm.
right? You're flatlining,
right?
Mhm. And then what happened?
And then, let's see. I think it all probably culminated in an argument with my partner, and I got very triggered and defensive, and then sort of the sadness was able to break through after that when I was reflecting on that.
Aha. Uh-huh. So it created a spark that made an opening, an outlet, And was there emotion in the conflict?
Yes.
You scream and yell?
No, but more of like more of sadness, like feeling hurt, like a mm-hmm. sort of a disproportionate response to like really extra sensitive and felt hurt uh-huh. by something that I don't think was, you know, it was not nearly
uh-huh.
what
uh-huh.
the voices were telling me it was and wasn't what it meant. And like it just
uh-huh.
got much bigger.
Uh-huh. So the overreacting got your attention and also got
yes.
you in touch with kind of what was really going on with you.
Yes.
And in, then that enabled you to step back and see that the whole thing had been a process?
The final step was after that, then I was sort of in a sadness that I was not really knowing what to do, and I actually went and started listening to all of, like, as many of the recordings that I had from the recording and listening, and
uh-huh.
that helped to disidentify from all of it.
Uh-huh. You can't imagine how much I love to hear that. Yeah.
It was, I've been more of a recorder than a listener, and
uh-huh.
I'm now seeing how important both parts are.
Yeah, yeah. Because you were able to be in touch with you, right? You could, you from a truly disidentified place, could see her,
mm-hmm.
right? Could get a sense of her and what she was going through and that sort of thing.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and a genuine compassion then is there. You want to be there for her.
Yes, I did.
Mm. Wow. Yeah. Well, yes, 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 and yes. That what you're describing, I mean, that kind of process can keep people trapped for years because it all feels so right. You know, you're keeping it together. You're handling things. You don't want to, we have so much conditioning about not getting out of control and, you know, you were there. You were doing all of the right stuff and you were completely identified and had no idea.
Yes. And then that weird twist of the sort of thinking, like the conditioning presenting as disidentified in some way.
Yes. Yeah. Well, yeah. And the recording and listening is key, isn't it? Because it, when it's inside our heads or even when we're talking to other people, you know, we're listening to the thoughts, we're listening to the voices, we're listening to what we're saying. The person who's listening believes it. The person who's talking, who knows what's going on with that person. Do they believe it? Don't they? I don't know. It could be a complete takeover, right? In a lucid moment, I wouldn't believe any of it, but in that, I believe it all. When I listen to it later, so I've talked this into a recorder, I listen to it later, and the person who's listening to it is not one of those two people. Right? It's not
mm-hmm.
the person who was saying it, it's not the person who was listening to that person say it. Right? So now,
uh-huh.
I really do have a chance to hear it from a disidentified place. Because it's like it's somebody else.
Wow, yeah, it really is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and when we hear that person's sincerity and vulnerability and, you know, a person can be, experiencing anything. It's just really sad about something but angry, you know, really disappointed. But the language is just upset. And when we listen in that disidentified way, we can feel right through to what's going on underneath. And we're moved by that person's vulnerability.
Wow, as you say that, it feels conditioning making me feel like this is a confession, but I realize I only record when it's the mentor. I haven't let any other aspects like work through things, or it's only when I feel like I'm having an insight.
Well, God knows that's a powerful time to record. And and goodness knows it's disidentifying to listen to that level of wisdom and compassion, right? And allowing the parts of you access to the mentor in that way. So allowing them, not self-hate, I'm not talking about that. I'm not talking about, you know, turning it over to karmic conditioning to rant and rave and carry on and make cases and that sort of thing. But when somebody is wants to talk about what's going on with her, what she's struggling with, what she's not seeing, what's hard for her and that sort of thing, very often letting her talk and then listening to it will either produce a recorded mentoring response or evoke a mentoring response in you that you may then choose to record.
That's a really good place for me to explore, I think. Thank you. Mm-hmm. That's really good.
Yeah. Bring her into the circle and just let her take advantage of the whole process. And
okay.
I do think that it will it'll be a good option, a good possibility for fending off that stealth identification that you went through.
Yes, I can see that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, it's great. It's so exciting. I will tell you that I've spent the last about a week, I guess, with Ashwini and I are working on a project of a game, a recording and listening game. And talking with you makes me even more excited to get it finished and get it out because I think it's going to, I hope that people will really enjoy it and benefit from it. And it's designed to speak to exactly this kind of conversation that we're having. So, you know, when somebody is in one of those places or just something's going on, I'm not really sure what it is, or, you know, I'm feeling, and we want to get in touch with the mentor and turn the energy, the attention from where it is to where we want it to be and change the energy in that way. So thank you for this. I'm inspired.
Oh. Well, thank you. I can't wait for it to come out.
I'll make sure you get a copy. How about that?
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Michael. Have a good night.
All right. Good night.
Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Kate. You're listening to Open Air. Sherry, I think we have time for one more caller here.
Good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, Sherry. Hello, Michael. This is Jeff in North Carolina.
Hey,
hi.
Jeff.
Hello.
What's going on with you in North Carolina?
Well, I wanted to talk a little bit tonight about teaching. There was a conversation with you and a caller probably a couple months ago who is a teacher, and I noticed some of the content of that call, there was a talk about what one focused on appreciates, and there was also talk about kind of allowing children to follow their own interests and be who they are, and rather than, this is kind of in my words now, but rather than putting a lot of controlling on them, I think you said something like the poor, beleaguered teacher who is trying to get kids to do da-da-da-da-da, and contrasting that with some kids who had, you know, grown up in the monastery, so to speak, and been around there and allowed the excitement of being allowed to follow what they were interested in.
In an alternative private school rather than in a public school with God knows how many children and one. I think poor beleaguered is a good description, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and what I noticed for myself, and then I'm not in a public school setting. In fact, I'm, you know, involved in a particular type of education where that is, where the founder talked about, you know, following the child and you know, the kind of the liberty we want to provide for children within some structure, but. But the reason I'm calling is because I noticed a lot of resistance come up in myself in the conversation that you had, again, a couple months ago or so. And so I didn't want to talk about it, and so that's why I'm calling.
Very good.
Right. So, you know, when I look at it for myself, there are a lot of, in my mind, you know, there are a lot of buts. Like, but you know, in my experience, children sometimes don't choose, you know, what's best for them. And they, you know, that's interesting. I mean, I'm listening to myself as I say these things. But, you know, that's what I think is best for them. But you know, they may not work as hard, or they may tend to socialize a lot and not necessarily focus on work. And these are things that are really important to learn, you know, and da 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 da. And so, you know, I'm just kind of wanting to explore some of these beliefs, and I'm really not sure where all of that will come out. But you know, I guess I wanted to start the conversation.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things, Jeff, that it reminds me of, I mentioned working on this project, and I was reading actually one of our books. And the point that was made was, if you want to know how you were treated when you were a child at a particular age, notice how you treat yourself now. That's one way to notice. And then notice how you feel about children at a particular age. So
yeah.
when we're around children, it is a tremendous opportunity to get a sense of what happened to us, because it's all in there as a little package, right? So I'm the kid that was doing whatever. I'm the adult who came down on that kid. I'm the person who ditched that kid in order to survive and go on to either please that adult or learn how to get away from that adult or what, however I managed to survive. But all of that is in there, and I usually have contempt or fear or aversion in some way to the child who is like the one that was rejected in me.
Yeah, that's it. It's interesting. It's really, you know, it's really good to start looking at these beliefs, you know, like who, you know, and I spend a lot of time enjoying my class and really loving them, but there is also all this other stuff about when I get irritated or, you know, what I think, how I think somebody should be different, and all of those sorts of things, who I get, you know, angry at, or at least in my mind, even if I don't share it with them. And it's often students who I perceive, you know, to, you know, not put as high a value on work as I do, for instance. That's one thing.
Yes, yes. Which is probably, if you went back and looked, which I imagine you have, would have been an issue for you growing up.
And you know, the funny thing is I have not looked at that. It's interesting to look at that now. You know, I mean, I think about, but I can see that in my relationship with my mom very much. as you know, as we're talking about it. And I hadn't actually not put that together. But I mean, I spend a lot of time which now I just realized gets labeled lazing around. And you know, spending long periods of time doing, you know, whatever that you know, because I, and then, you know, whatever that was, sports or, you know, or just reading or just spending long periods of time in my room by myself, you know.
Yes. Doing those kid activities. I mean, you know, kids, I mean, I can remember that. I could spend hours wandering around. You know, just one. I mean, I grew up in the country, so just wandering around.
Yeah.
Kind of talking to trees and playing in the creek.
Wow, it's amazing the fear that, you know, that I have at some level about, well, you know, the bad things are going to happen if I allow kids, you know, to spend time, you know, all their time in that way, or a lot of time in that way, that, you know, I really need to, you know, get them to be spending time in other ways, to corral them and da 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 da, whatever it is. And you know, and my job is a teacher, and there are expectations. And so kind of like, well, where does that leave me now? You know?
Of course, one of the things that occurred to me, and this is only because I wish I'd had a teacher like this. So when I was doing all of that wandering around, I was very active mentally, extremely active mentally. And it would have been wonderful if I'd had someone to kind of mentor me, to give me, to find out where I was, what I was doing, and then sort of give me the next step, you know, or channel that. I mean, I years later, I realized what those early interests were headed toward. I think an adult who was interested would have been able to point that out to me a lot sooner than I was able to wander into it by myself.
Mm-hmm. Boy, that, you know, this is so, sorry, go ahead.
Well, it's just that the assumption for us as adults is that they're not doing anything. If they're not doing anything, we relate to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's amazing because, again, in the kind of education that, you know, that I'm involved in, I tell this story all the time to people who, you know, when they want to know more about this kind of education. I talk about the woman who founded this. You know, she observed children, and then she found things to support them in what they were already doing.
Yeah.
And that to me sounds like exactly what you just said. Rather than, you know, spending so much time with Jeff's agenda, what if I spent more time really observing and listening and being attentive to the children?
And then perhaps encouraging them to meet Jeff's agenda.
I don't understand. Can you try me again on
that? That there's nothing to say they wouldn't be interested in what you are interested in if you made the connection for them.
So a connection meaning some spark of interest for them.
Yes, that would cause them to want to approach it from where they are. You know, so often, not just with children, with everybody, we want people to leave where they are and come to where we are.
Mm-hmm.
And almost everybody resists that, I think, kind of intelligently. You know, but if it's in their interest to come to where you are, then they will no doubt want to do that.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. This is so ironic because once again, this is a principle of the kind of education that I'm involved in. It's we offer an impressionistic lesson that really, you know, draws children in some way. And so really I'm being pointed back toward the basic principles of the kind of education and seeing how, you know, my better ideas in quotes have, you know, led me in other directions that have certainly, you know, I would guess been based in control or ideas of control and really, you know, I bet leading to suffering for me and, you know, I would guess some for the students as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, how handy that that your work and your teaching work and your spiritual mm-hmm. work are the mm-hmm. same thing.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
that's a good thing, isn't it? Yeah, it really is. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because then, of course, what's possible is for you truly to model what you want for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, someone who is trying to teach from a perspective that they don't actually relate to, that's difficult. But when you and they are all attempting the same thing, they at their level, you at your level, it's much more friendly.
Mm-hmm.
Compatible.
Yeah. You know, and what I'm looking at is I've had those sorts of aspirations, you know, aspirations kind of all along the lines of the things we've been talking about tonight, but I've let these other, you know, these ideas, these kind of, I'm not even sure what to call them, but somehow my beliefs and standards, in quotes, really, I'm sure my ego's beliefs and standards have taken precedence in many cases. So really, I think to do what we're talking about tonight, it's going to be important for me to be on the lookout for and discard a lot of those beliefs and standards.
Yeah, and of course, you know, we kid about that all the time in practice. What we know is we need to let go everything and just open to life living us, and away we go. But not when it comes to children or money or retirement or health. There, we need to jump back into conditioned mind to make sure we get it right. And that temptation is just so huge. You can't trust life with really important issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah, that's one I would say we all have to be on the lookout for because it's a deep, deep, deep belief.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I noticed kind of that those are the areas where there's a lot of suffering generally.
Mm-hmm.
And the areas where where my life doesn't feel like it's part of my practice.
Yes,
you know?
Exactly. Because those are the really, really real places. I mean, I can practice over here on the side, but these are places where I want something, and I need to get in there and make it happen. This is important. I'm not going to do this, thy will be done. Nonsense.
Right. Whereas just the opposite. It's this is really important. So this is a really good place to let go.
That's right. Yes. And let life in its wisdom and compassion do the guiding. Not my puny little ego. Yeah.
Well, Sherry, thank you very much.
Oh, you are so welcome. You are so welcome. We'll keep talking, huh?
Okay, will do. Thank you, Michael.
All right.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Jeff. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Jeff. You've been listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Another big blessing tonight, Sherry.
I'm telling you. Thank you, Michael.
Oh, thank you. I got some good parenting tips there, too, at the end. So
oh, good. Oh, good.
Conversation.
All right. But don't let the kids listen to the show, okay?
I won't.
Yeah, don't let them. We got to keep them in the dark a little bit about what's going on behind the
okay.
scenes.
Okay.
All right. Talk to you next week. Thank you,
okay.
Michael.
Thank you, Sherry.
Bye-bye.
Good night.